minutes, WB2BXO.
Yeah, sure, Frank. I'm not going anywhere too soon.
Thought I was tired, but I realized that you and most of the people on TechNet have real jobs to go to on a Monday morning, so I don't want to keep you up too late. Actually, I do some freelance work, but compared to, you know, getting up on Monday and going to a real job, it's nothing. Anyway, whatchamacallit? Yeah, there's a very interested in how good predictions of the future are. Neil deGrasse Tyson did a very good video on that. I think it was actually a presentation at some conference where he showed predictions that were made about the future of flight around 1900, and then predictions that were made about the future of space travel and the space program around 1958 or 1960, and both predictions were way off the mark. It's pretty funny. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's an old line that I repeat a little bit too much, probably, that I still remember. I love to read those magazine articles in Popular Science in the 60s about flying cars and all kinds of things. Predictions are worthless. Even, forget about predictions that reporters write, even if you go to the most brilliant people out there, you know, they just don't have a clue. If you look up good old Professor Hertz, where the cycle per second is named after, he discovered electromagnetic waves, and he told people that there would not be much of any value to them. William Gates, kind of poo-pooed the whole idea of the internet until it was obvious proven to him that he was. Some of the smartest people in the technology of prediction get completely wrong. So I don't bother myself with predictions from anyone. You might as well use.
But part of the problem is, I'm not really sure why Bill Gates got it wrong. You think he do a little better than others. And first of all, you're right. I mean, there's no way you're always going to get it right, though. I think the exercise of trying to look into the future has some value in itself, even if you're wrong. But I think part of the problem is that futurists, quote-unquote, will tend to look just at what's possible technologically and what's not, and not necessarily what's doable from a socioeconomic point of view. For example, why isn't the world being routinely crisscrossed by supersonic airliners now? And the answer seems to be that the first generation of supersonic airliners, the Concorde, wasn't economically successful. It always had to be subsidized, and the government got tired of doing that. Why didn't the U.S. Supersonic transport civilian supersonic aircraft program succeed? I think part of the reason is because the military's Valkyrie bomber, the B-70 bomber program, was canceled, and Boeing's intent was in all likelihood to leverage the technology from Valkyrie to build the SST, and without that published funding and research, they couldn't do it. Go ahead.
AC2GS, I sort of thought that the primary limitation for the national ability to do that was the sonic boom. They pretty much have isolated supersonic, non-military supersonic jets to the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean when they were using them. So, you know, cross-continental flights would probably blow up people's windows or do other things. But I agree to you, with you to a degree. A lot of these predictions were simply extrapolations of known technology. They certainly didn't take into account any extraneous interactions with society, and they didn't certainly guess what the new technological breakthroughs would be. But you know, if they could do that, they'd be trillionaires.
Well, the people who are trillionaires, and sometimes like Bill Gates, they're trillionaires even if they didn't quite guess right. But they guess close enough. You know, sometimes you just have to get close enough. It's a fascinating area. You probably saw, I know CBS has been pushing it and it's been online in a couple of places, that United Airlines purchased or agreed to purchase, I'm not sure exactly what language they used, a fleet of supersonic airliners for Boom Aerospace for delivery in 2029, which is kind of interesting because the aircraft themselves are vaporware at this point. Go ahead. There we go.
Hello again. You back?
Yeah. EchoLink, just like with the other station, EchoLink did something funky for a moment, so I'm back.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to let people go once in a while. It happened also to AC2LR. And she had to basically shut the connection off in order to reset it.
Hey, Roy.
Yes, Ed. You're about 85% noise, so it's not a fun sound.
I just thought of something. Let me go around the deck.
That sounds much better, by the way.
Can I stay here and do it?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, I don't want to break anything up.
Okay, Ed, just say your piece. Frank's here listening to both of us.
I have been delving in anti-gravity technology.
Okay, sort of depends what you mean by anti-gravity. Sometimes people use anti-gravity incredibly loosely.
Of course, this is bad. No, what it is, you know, I'm still going backpacking, and there are these new backpacks that came out, and I decided at my age I'll cheat any way I can, so I bought myself a new anti-gravity backpack. What it really means is the waist belt is almost like a spring-loaded clamshell that clamps onto your hip bones for a better transfer of weight so it feels lighter.
Oh, that's a nice design. That's a, you know, I always like it when engineers come up with something new and fresh and actually useful instead of just trendy nonsense.
If you want to look it up, Osprey is the brand, and the model is the Atmos, as in Atmosphere, ATMOS, AG65, as in anti-gravity 65 liters.
Okay, I'll look it up. Is it something that I could find on Amazon, or should I just Google the entire internet?
It is on Amazon. I bought mine at REI, the Roosevelt Field Shopping Center. It's almost $300. It ain't cheap. But like I said, at my age, I'll take any way I can cheat.
Yeah, okay. I'm interested in mechanical things, all kinds of things. So I'll look it up and check it out. I like well-designed things. The articles that really annoy me in QST are Hints and Kinks, I think it's called, where people basically take garbage that I would throw out and repurpose into something that almost works.
The ultimate was ARL was pushing NBVM, narrow band voice modulation. Oh, it has to be 30 or 34 time, and then it just slowly went away. It was never mentioned again.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, with the exception of this morning on 10 meters, which was a zoo, I have never seen 10 meters as lively as it was this morning. But with the exception of that, there's a lot of empty spaces. You don't really have to limit bandwidth that much on the ham bands, unfortunately.
I think this wasn't intended for 20-meter sideband, but I'm just saying, they pushed it, and it went nowhere.
Well, I mean, that happens a lot. That happens kind of all the time in business. I give you as a perfect example Alphabet. Who the hell calls Google Alphabet? And I think there's going to be as many people calling Google Alphabet as there are people going to call Facebook Meta.
Yes, yes, fully noted, agree 100%.
Okay, Frank, I don't want to let you out there. Are you okay down there in Pennsylvania?
Haven't managed to nuke the place yet. I'm still here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. Lately, I hear a lot of political weirdness going on in your state. You apparently have a kind of dichotomy going on. You know, the north, the south, the east, the west. I don't know exactly what's going on in Pennsylvania, but I wish you luck.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a bit like New York City, Buffalo, and the rest of the state in New York. We have Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and then the rest of the state is sort of like the mid, sort of like the rest of the state is red, let's put it that way.
Okay, it just seems that thankfully upstate New York is kind of not opened its mouth too much lately. Or at least I haven't noticed it. But there's all kinds of weird people popping up who say they're from Pennsylvania. So I don't know. It's unfortunate. We're kind of reliving the Civil War in many ways. You know, family against family and all that unfortunate nonsense.
Yeah, well, some of the historians. Doris Kearns Goodwin, and too late, I'm not remembering the guy's name. Doug, what's his name? Some of the historians have made that analogy, and they do say it's frighteningly close. It's a little crazy. Well, we'll see what happens on Tuesday in Virginia. I hope that goes well. My wife is throwing fits about that, saying it's not going to bode well, but I try to explain to her that, you know, Virginia kind of has its own unique politics, and what happens there may not necessarily reflect what's going to happen in the rest of the country in the next couple of years. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't make predictions about technology. I certainly don't make them about politics. You know, if I had to put money down on Georgia back 2 years ago, I wouldn't have put a dime down on how it actually ended. You know, reality is much more interesting even than fiction you can make up.
I know, you can't make this stuff up. Watched a very interesting movie my wife found on Hulu called Official Secrets. And There's a twist at the end of the movie, and it's hard to believe. I had to go look it up on Wikipedia to see if it really happened. It's just an amazingly interesting story. Go ahead.
Okay, you dropped out in the middle of its title, so repeat it if you will, and I'll scribble it down and look it up tomorrow.
Yeah, sorry, it was probably talking too loud, and as they say on FM, over-deviating. The movie is Official Secrets. It's the story of a British lady by the name of Catherine Gunn, who was worked for a British GCHQ at one time. Absolutely fascinating story. Like I said, it's hard to believe the twist at the end of the movie really happened. I had to go look it up to see if they were really telling the accurate story or just, you know, through it some Hollywood drama.
AC2GS, it's very rare that dramas are truthful. Even when they're fiction works based on a book, when you hand it to a television or a movie writer, they have to redo it. So it's not even accurate to fictional movies, to fictional books, rather, especially history. I mean, the worst example, I remember being so deflated by finding out the real story of Thomas Alva Edison. I had seen the biography movie when I was a little kid, and then I read the real historical stuff, and my jaw dropped to the floor.
Yeah, I don't remember the differences there. Talking about discovery of electromagnetic waves, by the way, very interesting story in QST. A couple of years ago, and I'm not sure I can give you enough information for you to be able to find it, but something like a woman by the name of Mary Texana Malin, a name that had Texas in it anyway, who was a telegrapher in World War I and then owned a telegraphy school. And her father, a Professor Malin, actually supposedly experimented with wireless telegraphy between two mountain peaks in the Blue Ridge Mountains around 1868. And then somehow the whole thing got dropped and never really went anywhere. It's a kind of interesting story. And it'd be interesting to understand why the whole thing got dropped. But, then again, you know the story that Marconi's genius, you know, people like to say he invented wireless. What he really did was realize its utility as a business and marketed it. Again, it's the whole thing of whether you can predict technology. He was one of the first ones who apparently realized that wireless telegraphy was actually useful.
Yeah, he was one of the early technology entrepreneurs. He didn't, you know, as time went on and public relations was present even back then, he tried to kind of bend people's ideas. You sort of see the same thing with Elon Musk. If you talk to the average guy, they'll tell you that Elon Musk designed the Tesla cars. He didn't. They were designed by engineers. He just invested and threw the engineers who started the company out of the company. A lot of entrepreneurs try and fix their name above the title of, you know, the light bulb. I had this image of Thomas Edison trying every single filament until the one that worked. In reality, he was a manager. He hired a whole bunch of people who did that for him and sweated, and he then promoted it and made a lot of money with it. So, you know, reality and people's ideals of reality are two different things, even to this day.
WB2AV.
Yes, Ed.
Steve Jobs was the idea man who had the engineers do it. Now, I'll never forget, you know, John Stewart, when he had the Daily Show, said, and Steve Jobs drove his engineers mercilessly, but it worked. And he looks into the camera and says, business owners, let me remind you, Steve Jobs drove his people mercilessly, and then when it worked, he made them millionaires.
Well, if they didn't, if he didn't drive them to the insanity, maybe they he drove them to millionaires. But people, unfortunately, have taken his biography, which is a very well-written book, and used it as an excuse to be, pardon my French, an a-hole in business. I don't think you necessarily have to quite be that much of a sociopath. But yeah, he drove people. He had an idea, and it was a legitimate marketing idea. He was not a designer. He wasn't a technical designer. He didn't design circuits or such. He was an idea guy. He was a promotions guy, and he was a pain in the ass.
I have four people with that personality. Want to hear the names?
Okay.
Newton, Einstein, Jobs, and the father of nuclear submarine, Richover.
Okay, I don't know if I would quite agree with you with Einstein. You probably know a lot more about him than I do. Eccentric, yeah, kind of flaky on the side. You know, not everyone marries their cousins, what can I tell you? I don't know, maybe I just have a soft spot for him.
I know that his first wife and his son hated him.
Well, with good reason. He basically walked out on them. That doesn't usually lead to good recommendations.
Also, you know, his first wife was about the only female graduate student in physics in the world, and she definitely did help him at some level, undetermined, on his, you know, mind-blowing presentations. You can find people who say she just, you know, was a sounding board and a typist. Some say, oh, no, she really, you know, she actually contributed, but he never gave her one bit of credit.
Well, I don't know. It's all kind of lost to history, unfortunately, how much. But I don't know. You know, brilliant guy. You know, brilliant guys tend to be awful people. Stephen Hawking. I think Stephen Hawking was a genius. I think his health problems. It's remarkable what he accomplished despite them. But ultimately, if you really think about it, he was a bit of an a-hole as well. I mean, the guy is a quadriplegic, and he actually left his wife for his nurse.
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, at least he wasn't rude to people in public like these others were.
Well, but also it would probably be more difficult to him, for him to have been rude. I mean, most of his, you know, a significant portion of his life, he was stuck using an American-accented voice synthesizer.
Wait a minute, maybe that was the only model available.
Yes, well, originally it was the only model available, but after a while he just got used to it, so he kept it.
I cut him slack on that one.
No, I'm not blaming him for having an American-accented voice synthesizer. I'm just saying that, you know, when you're in a wheelchair and you're in a using a voice synthesizer that you have to type into, being snarky probably it might kind of modify your snarkiness. I assume it would do that to me.
I have an idea. Did you ever hear of the stories of Rickover's interviewing, you know, the guy with the first nuclear submarine set up an office in the Navy. It was kind of like, you know, the other guy, Steve Jobs type, brilliant, but totally impossible to deal with. His interviewing of applicants to work for him was world famous, and my son knows most of the stories and told me his favorite. Want to hear it?
Okay, sure.
So in like the late 50s, he's interviewing this new engineer, and he notices, he says, I see your name is Coomb, G-O-M-B. And the fella says, yeah, we kind of try to keep the B silent and just, you know, say, you know, our last name is Tom. And Brinkover says, no, G-O-M-B, I'm going to call you Mr. Coomb. And then he says, all right. Then they go on. And then Rickover asks him, so when did you first become interested in nuclear energy? Oh, he said, oh, that's easy. The minute I heard about the atomic boom. And Rickover looks and stares at him, points the door, says, get out of my office. Rickover's assistant opens the door, and as the guy's walking out, he says to him, sure you got the job, don't you?
That's a great story. That's a funny one.
And I think it's true. I mean, you know, my son had a Rickover interview with Hyman Rickover number 7, so he knows the drill.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're not in the crosshairs of these characters, it's funny as hell to listen to stories about them. Medicine is full of them. We used to have these great stories that everyone would share back and forth of you know, medical students that almost ended their career just crossing swords with chiefs of surgery and such. So, but you know, as long as I'm not there and I'm just hearing a second ad, I would hate to have that happen to me personally.
Well, to this day, people before they enter that group in the Navy have what's known as a Rickover interview 30 years after Rickover's death.
Okay, I guess it works for people who are masochists.
No. I mean, they call it a Rickover interview, but it's more like what you would expect.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what can I tell you? I mean, you know, great men you pay a price for being a great man. I have never met a incredibly successful guy that I would call just a basic guy, you know, who kind of blended into the wall. There's always something strange about them.
There are a few exceptions. In economics, I think Paul Krugman is fantastic. Neil deGrasse Tyson is fantastic. They're there. Few and far between, but they're there.
Okay, I mean, I know of these guys in their public life. I also usually try not to correlate a public image with a private image, unless I've heard a lot of private stories, and with those two, I haven't heard anyone tell me about anything that I can recall.
Actually, my wife has a cousin, two cousins, who unfortunately we never see, who actually grew up with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and they were in each other's house, and they said he was, at least as a high school kid, he was really nice.
Okay, unfortunately, science popularizers, by their very nature, are kind of both promoting and self-promoting personality types. It's kind of difficult not to sound a little bit like a circus barker when you're popularizing science topics to non-scientists.
I have a theory. And it involves you and me. I've come to the conclusion, if you pass a certain threshold, in native intelligence to become crazy. I think I am just a little bit below that threshold. I mean, I believe I have no trace of being crazy, even though, you know, I fool around a lot, but that's not what I mean by crazy. You know, you say, yeah, I'm crazy. That's not what I mean. You, on the other hand, by all intents and purposes, should be into Never Never Land and completely insane, and I can't figure you out from that respect.
Well, I either hide it well that I'm crazy, that and doesn't seem that way, or I hide that I'm not that smart.
Or maybe it's like Einstein tweaked Newton's laws. Maybe I need to do a Roy tweak to my law.
Okay, I mean, they've been doing it with Moore's law since he mentioned it, so why not modify your law?
I'll think about it.
Okay, very good, Ed. Yeah, this gig is endlessly complimentary. People compliment me way more than they do in the office. So this is a kind of a guilty pleasure, I guess, on my part.
Because they know you're not getting paid, and if they irritate you, you'll stop doing it.
Well, that might be the case.
All right, I think I've done enough damage for one evening.
Okie dokie. It's always a pleasure chatting with you. I hope you continue to come back to the technical net. I enjoy your input.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind that I went against what you said, saying it's, you know, it's a triad between hydrogen, gasoline, and lithium battery fires. They all suck.
No, I understand. I tend to think that, among other things, because we have more than 100 years of general experience with gasoline, we're maybe not as completely dumb as we are with lithium fires and hydrogen fires, but I could be wrong.
You ever go past a car burning furiously after an accident on the highway?
Thankfully, no.
I have. If that happened to you, you might rethink it.
Well, you know, I'm not thrilled for any kind of conflagration. It's just that, as far as I'm aware, we don't know quite as much as we really would like to know about containing, carrying, transferring hydrogen in a less than industrial way. So that's my little fright with hydrogen as opposed to gasoline. There are a lot of dangerous chemicals all over the place. Things that will melt us, things that will burn us, all kinds of nasty things. So there's an almost infinite number of ways to damage yourself. And being a chemistry major back in the late 70s, I was exposed to all kinds of awful things. I regularly would carve holes in the middle of asbestos pads in the open air and spread the fibers around. We had bottles of benzene with the tops off of it. It was a mess.
Miracle is you survived to this point. I have an interesting story for you about gasoline. If I say Air America, does that ring a bell?
There was a movie about it, and apparently it was a company that was a front for the CIA.
Yes, by the way, the movie came out in 1991 with Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr., and it was a great movie. Now, it was based on a serious book, and the plot line basically has nothing to do with it. Completely fictional. But it does reflect the world that was very real. This fictitious story takes place in a very, very, very real world. And I read the real book it was loosely based on. and it was about these guys that were, you know, airdropping supplies, mostly to the Hmong, H-M-O-N-G, you know, some natives that were fighting the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, because, the Viet Cong were killing them long before they ever started with the Americans. So Air America, Cuba was a freight airline. They had a lot of cargo planes, but they actually were doing CIA work. And a lot of it was dropping weapons and food and the like to the Hmong villagers. So far, so good?
Yep.
Every once in a while, these guys realized that their unarmed planes were an issue, and they developed something called hot soup, which is you take a pallet with two 55-gallon drums of gasoline. You open the drums, you stir in a few boxes of Tide detergent into each, which kind of affects the gasoline and turns it almost into a gelatinous mess. I'll let you figure out the chemistry. But the idea being they're all sloshing around. And they take this pallet with the two cans of gas, they'd load on a cargo plane, and they would take a phosphorus grenade on a parachute-style ripcord. Sometimes they use parachutes, sometimes they wouldn't. And they would drop this out of the back of a cargo plane or something that wanted to blow up. And the ripcord would pull the pin on the phosphorus grenade, which would then start burning furiously. It would burn through the metal of the 55-gallon drums, and it would start flaming. If they were using parachutes, the parachutes would burn off, and it would drop literally like a bomb. And when it hit the ground, the tanks would rupture. Tremendous explosion.
Geez, sounds scary. In my time, I was a chemist at one point, but when I was a little kid, that was one of my many hobbies. And I used to make all kinds of explosives. I used to love thermite reactions. Those were loads of destructive thoughts.
Want to hear my burning magnesium story?
Okay, I think to this day, someplace in my house, I have some magnesium ribbon. I've never been without it.
Through work, I got to meet a fascinating civilian engineer working with the military. But he got his start back in the day as an enlisted man. And he was on an aircraft carrier, and they had an accident where a helicopter was burning on the deck of the carrier. And apparently helicopters use a moderate amount of magnesium, and the nightmare scenario is that the magnesium, while burning, can come together into a molten ball about the size of a softball, and it will burn its way through anything, sink the ship by burning through deck after deck after deck. Okay, so far?
Yep.
So a grizzled old Navy chief comes up to him and says, "You, come with me." They go downstairs. Now in the day, everybody was smoking and they used these, steel pails filled with sand as ashtrays. He says, "Where's that mudbucket? Come with me." Now the chief knew exactly where this ball of burning magnesium was going to come through the ceiling below the flight deck. Had him waiting, and then his ceiling starts to turn red, so they knew exactly where. When it comes down, it lands in the bucket, and burning furiously, you've got to be very careful, and the guy says, "Come with me," they go up the stairs to the deck, and he says, "Fling it over the side," and when it hit the water, there was a tremendous explosion.
Well, yeah, magnesium has a lot of oxidizing power.
I don't think I'll ever forget that story.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fires that, people just aren't used to anything but
expanded flammable fires. So they just want to treat them all the same way. Electrical fires don't work that way. Chemical fires often don't work that way. But, you know, the average schmo out there just wants to pour water on it. That doesn't really help in some situations. So I wish people were a little bit more educated than they seem to be.
Wait a minute, could that be the energy storage medium of the future, ribbons of magnesium?
Well, it certainly has potential energy. You know, lithium has more stored density energy, which is probably one of the reasons why people tinker with lithium. Although, you know, they've been having some limited success with aluminum-based rechargeable batteries. They keep on trying to figure out a way to swap the lithium out so that, you know, it's a lot easier to mine things like aluminum, safer smelting, and all kinds of things. So battery technology sticks. You know, in the old days when I did the science talk, every week I had a battery technology story that was going to change the world. And so far, we haven't changed our world.
Oh, we've changed the world, just not in that respect.
True. I just meant in the terms of battery storage technology.
All right. I think we've both done enough damage. Thank you very much for putting up with me, and I think I'll sign now.
You're welcome, Ed. A pleasure as always. Frank, I don't know if you're still out there because unfortunately my EchoLink client crashed on me, so I haven't been able to monitor whether you're still with us.
And the carrier to drop and then for EchoLink to come up and let us transmit when I and also Kay was on EchoLink and it was making me crazy earlier also. Yeah, that's okay. I'm just kind of trying to figure out what to do with a client's resume when the client has zero content. Anyway, I think it's time to sack out here. Probably going to do a quick check of 30 meters and then hit the sack. Sir Leroy, WB2BXO.
Okie dokie, my computer just crashed, so it's nature's way of telling me to go to sleep. So thanks for the conversation, Frank. Thanks for coming to the technical net. Have a good week, and I hope we talk again soon.
All right, let me take this moment to make the official WB2EAV clear tonight.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5:00 a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WB2ZSA.
W2VL repeater.
Roger, roger.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Morning, Ron. W2QZ.
Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'd be fine, thank you. I trust you're the same. I will not be in the car for too long. I'm going to a friend's house. Having a problem with his computer. It doesn't load. It just stays black with my line going across. I can rescue it. It's his business machine, although it's backed up. If I can save the computer, I'm going to try.
I wish you luck. I hope you could help him out. It's a nice day out here. I just got a new easy pass. The slim size. The smaller one. I had the flat, big rectangular one for years. So I called him up. I said, I'd like to get the new type. Actually, because the hole that I had, this plastic holder with the suction cups, is seeing better days and broken and so on. But he sent me one. So I just stopped at an auto parts store to try to get a holder with the suction cups. They don't have it, so I'll have to try a couple of stores. Life in the big city, no big deal. But it's really nice out here. Back to you.
Yeah, you don't need, I mean, it comes with Velcro strips. If it's the one that's not exactly like a brick. It's sort of slanted in the front, and mine is about 3 or 4 years old. It did replace the old one. The old one also didn't have suction cups. It had Velcro strips. Call them up and ask them for a Velcro strip mounting kit. Get two that paste to the window and that go on the back. I just tore the back off the mounted strip and stuck it to the window. Works just fine.
I came with that, but I switch it from one car to the other, so I don't have two easy passes. So that's why I use the suction cup holder.
I have two easy passes. They're free. Why not get a second one from the car and make it simple?
Well, let me see if I can get the holder with the suction cups first. If I can't, I'll call them up. I thought that was pretty nice, because this is my second one. The first one, they sent me a notice saying that yours is about to expire. I'm going to replace it. I think they sent me a box and sent it back. So this one's on me. I have to take it to the post office, put it in an envelope, and mail it back. They're in Staten Island. So we'll see how it works out. So are you still going back down south?
Roger that, but not for a while. And I'm here. I got to run out. So it's nice hearing from you. And, you know, use the KISS principle. Get a second one from your car, question nothing, bounce it on the windshield, and forget about it. Of course, you zero, except the phone call. Anyway, Ron, be well. Take care. N2ZUC, W2QZ.
Good talking to you, Al. N2ZUC. Clear.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
K2KMB, KC2WBH mobile.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
KD2AMZ mobile.
How are you doing on this day? KD2OGV also mobile.
Good morning, Craig. How you doing? I took the day off because I got to go to the doctors and take care of some stuff. No big deal. So I'm just driving there right now.
Take things easy and you'll feel great. As usual, on my way to Babel. I'm actually there now. I've actually got a nice amount of advice from a friend of mine that I did a van with on OC on Thursday. And he actually told me that Weight Watchers is a very nice thing to look at in terms of what I can have that has almost no points. I've actually been having more fruit now and trying to eat out less.
Good for you, Craig. Good for you. I hope it works out well for you.
And unfortunately, I'm still less active when I work, so I got to keep myself moving. Another thing is I also got to constantly fuel my metabolism, because if I just starve myself, then it's not active. So that's not usually good to just not eat at all. So I'm having a little bit, but not as much. So it's always good to limit your intake. I am going to go park, so take care, and 7-3, KD2AMZ, KD2OGV Mobile, in Babylon Station, clear.
73 is great, you have a good day. KD2AMZ, clear, but I will be listening.
KD2AMZ, KD2KNH.
KD2KNH, KD2AMZ, hey, Charlie, how you doing? I can't stay on long, I'm trying to pull into, to get my teeth checked out. How you doing, Charlie?
All right. Back to work. Not as nice as yesterday, but still a beautiful day. I heard you on there, but talking to Craig, and he was talking about Weight Watchers. I was having a Boston cream donut from Dunkin' Donuts.
Copy that. I'm just trying to find myself a parking spot here. I'm not about to go pay a valet where I can just as easily park my own car and walk.
Yes, I never use a valet, ever. And I never will. unless I physically can't walk for some reason, but, no thank you.
Yep, copy that. Let me, I'll just park here in this other parking lot here. And of course, this motherfucker... Oh, I shouldn't say that. Oh, that was terrible of me. I was wrong. Takes up the whole damn space. All right. Later.
All right, Mike. You get 10 demerits. But we all slip now and then. You have a good day. KD2, KD clear.
KD2, MZ clear.
KD2, KMB, KC2, WBH, mobile.
WA2KRM, WA2YJW.
Viewers N2D who are listening, you out there, Richie? I'm making a repeater from Mount Vernon, New York. This is Paul N2D2I.
Doesn't sound like Mike, so it's got to be Pilly. Glad you arrived safely.
Hey, Wayne, how are you?
Good. This is KD2 UDU. Very good, Pilly. Glad to hear your voice.
At your lunch break?
I normally go to lunch around 11:30. Sitting here, relaxing for a few minutes. Got like 15 more minutes to go.
Today the weather is beautiful.
Sure, it's a nice change, but I prefer the summer. So is Mike at work or is he standing there with you?
He's driving, and well, I come from a 30 degree Celsius, which was, should be something around the 70s.
Well, I hope you brought some warm coats, because Wednesday and Thursday it's going down into the 30s at night.
Is that Celsius?
No, it's 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So Celsius, probably around 3 degrees?
No, it will, 32 Fahrenheit, 0 Celsius, so it will be, for me, freezing. But don't worry, I brought the heavyweight.
That's good.
Are you coming to the meeting tonight?
Yeah, I know where that question came from. I honestly, Billy, I don't know. I'm actually leaving on a trip, and I have a lot of things to do before I go, so it's going to be a real tight squeeze.
Oh, don't worry. The candies I brought for all of you will be waiting for you.
Well, thank you, Billy. I'll definitely see you when I get back if I don't get there. Oh, I got a landline. All right, I'll be standing by.
KD2UVDBW standing by.
N2D2R listening.
KD2UDU soliciting WA2CBS.
Andy, I think he's got a landline.
Okay, who just responded? Who's this?
KD2VDW and wife from Mexico.
Oh, okay, very good. So I'll say hello to a wife in Mexico, and how you doing?
Hi, Andy.
Yeah, how are you? We never met. Oh, I didn't meet Mike either. but I know where you are. You're not far from a place that I frequently dine.
Where is that?
Yeah, it's an Italian place near you that I go to, and I like the food.
Oh, she was wondering.